Did you know you can save up to 70% on the best brands just by shopping at FromRebel.com? We're talking about strollers, car seats, high chairs, espresso machines, cookware, everything you need for way less. Here's how it works. Every single day, Rebel drops thousands of new products on the site for up to 70% off. It is a constant stream of endless deals from top brands like Abba Baby, Nuna, Baby Bjorn, Breville, Nespresso, KitchenAid, Le Creuset, and more. But you have to act fast because every deal is one of a kind. So if you see something you love, make sure you add to cart fast. So stop paying full price when you don't have to. Whether it's baby gear, kitchen upgrades, or a treasure for your home you didn't know you needed, Rebel has it for way less, up to 70% less. Shop from Rebel.com and save big.
I definitely question, like, am I equipped to do this? Can I take Rosalie to the next level? Maybe I was just really good at getting us to this point.
We need to change some things up.
I need to know what Rosalie is doing.
It's obvious you're just starting this brand to make money. It's time to get loud. Welcome back to Loud Talk with Lavi, a podcast where we break down the walls of beauty standards one flaw at a time. And I am joined by an amazing guest today. Please give a warm welcome to the founder of Rose and Skin. Jameika, thank you so much for joining me on Loud Talk today.
Yes, no. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here and chat with you.
Yeah, so just to jump right in, do you want to share with the audience just like a kind of biography on yourself, like your background and kind of a little bit about how you grew up and then what kind of brought you to starting Rosen?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm from California. I grew up in like a small town on the Central Coast, which is like halfway between LA and the Bay. And, you know, spent most of my time there, obviously then went on to college and I studied at UCLA. So I lived in LA for a few years. Right when I finished at undergrad is when I started like really getting into Rosen full time. Rosen was really born out of my own struggles with skincare. So I had like very severely acne prone skin growing up. Kind of just like, honestly, I think I started breaking out like fifth or sixth grade. And it was just one of those things like all the antibiotics and the clindamycin and spironolactone. Like I kind of did everything. Nothing really ended up working for me. And so I was always just like very self-conscious about my skin. Also growing up where I grew up, I was like one of the few like black people in the area. So like hyperpigmentation, dark spots. So my friends might've been breaking out, but they just like didn't deal with that like I did. So it was kind of just like a double whammy, I think. And that's really like what led to, I think, my passion and understanding for the acne space and ultimately what led to me starting to think about Rosen. And so, yeah, I was kind of like tinkering around with products that I would like DIY for myself, which is obviously like not recommended, but it was something that I did a lot in college and eventually started learning a little bit more about like formulation and pH and all these things and started making products that I wanted to sell. When I graduated, that's when I started kind of like selling products with Rosen. I was at the same time a very anticlimactic launch. So it was kind of just me trying to sell products to like 50 followers on Instagram. Like I wasn't making any money. But I had like a few boutiques back home that would carry my products on consignment. And I just kind of like built it from there. Obviously spent the like next few years just kind of like slowly scaling everything up. 2020 was a really big year for us. So Black Lives Matter, supporting Black owned brands, also e-commerce and direct to consumer just did really well because everyone was at home.
Right.
And so that really continued to grow in the trajectory that we were already growing, but it really just like cemented a lot of levels for us when it came to like getting into retail and some of these other opportunities that I think came for Rosen after 2020. And so now we're carried in Ulta Beauty and then we're also on Target.com. Obviously our goal is really to like reimagine what drugstore acne looks like, especially for folks who do deal with like hyperpigment and dark spots, right? And so that's our biggest goal and what we're always doing. And I think through all the formulas and conversations we have, that's where we hope to be. It's just like staying in the mix of that conversation.
Absolutely. No, it's great to hear more on the background of the brand. I've been familiar with it for I think around 3 years now, but it is always great to just kind of know how everything started. And It's really inspiring too, because I'm in my last year of my university right now, and I just launched my own skincare brand last year. So hearing your story is definitely very inspiring because, like you mentioned, it really just starts with, like we're in the stages right now, just telling like the people we know, and that's kind of like where it all starts. So it is definitely inspiring to hear. Were there any doubts for you, like when you did start, and times where you felt like, okay, this is not working, or you felt like maybe, this isn't your path? And how did you kind of keep your head up to keep going?
I would say honestly, a lot more of my doubts and like insecurities have come later stage, like where I'm
Okay.
at now. Early on, and I don't know if it's just like naivete or whatever, but I was like, no, like this is a great idea. Like this deserves to be on the market. And I didn't really have a lot of doubts with what I was doing. I think also, though it was so small, growth was consistent, right? It was like, maybe five customers and then seven and then 10. And so it was slowly growing, and people who used it enjoyed the product. And so I think that helped me keep going and understand, like, okay, like this makes sense. And once people get it and try it, they enjoy it, right? And
Right.
they have a good time and they're seeing results. And so like I'm on the right path. I would say the hardest thing starting out was kind of graduating undergrad and potentially like being broke. Like I didn't have any money. I wasn't making any sales. I was like, I really want to do this. And so there was definitely like a pride thing there where I was like, I should be like kind of like further along in life and I should be kind of like doing something more here. But I'm like barely paying rent right now because I decided to do this. And I think that was difficult for me to like wrap my head around, like, okay, just like accept where you're at. And if you believe in this idea, like keep pushing it. But from the brand perspective, I think I always felt really strong on what I was doing, especially like in those early days.
Absolutely. And starting off too, I mean, like, I know there were so many learning curves that I had to take on with starting a brand. So when you were in that space, did you grow up around like entrepreneurs? Did you have people in your life that kind of guide you on like, okay, this is kind of the steps you'll take, or was it all just like foreign territory that you had to navigate on your own?
Yeah, I like to say like a mix. I grew up with a lot of entrepreneurs in my family, but a lot from the service side.
Okay.
Landscapers, construction workers, house cleaners, like things like that. Where it's like they all worked for themselves, but they weren't like necessarily running a business, right? Like they're kind of providing services with them. Maybe they'll bring on like a friend to help them. And so I think the idea of like working for myself and like doing my own thing and not having to clock into a job, that wasn't very foreign. But the idea of like, I think entrepreneurship in like a more modern sense and like this like, lofty, like scale your company sense, that was very new to me. I remember like explaining the word entrepreneurship, like I knew what it was, but to me in my mind, it was like one of those words that not everybody understood. Like if I had like, when you try to tell your grandma what your like business degree is or whatever, you're like trying to like dumb it down. That's what entrepreneurship I thought that word was. And I remember trying to explain it to, I was tutoring at the time, I was trying to explain it to her parents. And he's like, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? And I was like, oh, yeah. Like I didn't say it, but I was like, oh, okay. Like people know what this is. And
Right.
like people know what I'm trying to do. And so like those things were very new to me. The idea of like equity, I didn't know what that was until I was like finishing up my undergrad degree. And so those ideas of like building a company, scaling it were very new to me. And I got some resources through like my undergrad. And then there was like an accelerator program called Startup UCLA that helped a lot. So like those programs, I think, helped me understand what it meant to like build a company in the sense that like we're thinking about,
Absolutely. And the early days of starting off with your products, did you do like all the formulating yourself, or did you outsource that?
Yeah, so I did all the formulating myself, which was a pain at the beginning with some products. I just like had such a hard time understanding how to preserve a product properly was my biggest thing. But I did everything myself and I still develop all the formulas at Rosen. I don't do all of the production anymore, but basically like I'll develop a formula. I have a bunch of ingredients at my spot. So it's like I always equate it to like baking. So I'm like trying a bunch of recipes and like making a formula at home. I'll test it out. And then once I land on something I like, then I'll kind of like send it to the manufacturer for them to iterate and bring back to us. But yeah, it was a lot of like trial and error early on to learn the basics of like.
Definitely. No, I can relate to that so much. I think I did more skincare concoctions in my kitchen last year than actual like cooking and baking. So, and it's cool to talk to you about that because I've in this industry, I've connected with lots of different brand founders, but there's a very select few who actually like started and like making the formulas themselves. And you know, it's very inspiring to hear too, like that you're still doing that creation to that to this day. And that's something I'm very passionate about too. So that's super cool. And it changes, I think, the even myself as like a user of Rosen, you know, it completely changes the user experience knowing like, okay, like this was really like touched by the hands of the founder and like really put all of that thought into the product. So that's super cool. So what would you say to anyone who maybe is listening to this and like doubting starting a business? Like, what are your top pieces of advice to someone looking for that, you know, leap of faith, or even if they're kind of doubting if it is for them? Because let's be real, like entrepreneurship isn't for everyone.
I think the biggest thing if you're trying to get into, I think, entrepreneurship by any means is how passionate you are about your idea and how strong you feel that your need is not being solved in the market. I think there's ways to build brands that aren't this huge need state or really adjacent to something that already exists. But a lot of times, the people who build those kind of brands have a lot of resources, they have a lot of capital, they have a lot of connections. And so it's like, okay, yeah, we can like build a dupe, or we can like make another pimple patch and just launch a brand and go crazy. But it's like, okay, behind the scenes, they have a lot going on. Whereas if you're starting bootstrapped and you're a lot smaller, feeling so strong like this doesn't exist, this isn't being done in the way that I want it to be done, especially when I started, it was like drugstore, like legacy Acme. And I was like, this isn't going on, like this needs to happen. That strong passion for your idea and that clear gap in the market, I think, is what's going to keep you rolling. I think when you're kind of like, I just want to be an entrepreneur, the tough times feel really tough because it's like you don't care enough about that business or that idea to keep rolling. Or I think even if it's like, I just want to start X, Y, and Z company because I like X, Y, and Z industry. Again, same thing. It can get really trying because now you're second guessing yourself. Whereas like, if you feel super clear, like, yo, I love what I'm doing, I know nobody's doing it like this, like it makes it easier to ride through those times because you're like, they just don't know yet. You know what I mean? And so I would say that's like always the mindset I'd like founders to go into building a brand, especially if they're strapped for resources. Now, if you have more resources, you have more connections, you have, maybe you already have a following base or you have a bunch of money, then it doesn't, you can get away with a lot more, right? And it's a lot easier to kind of like ride those waves. But that's kind of what I would say if you're like people looking to get into it and feeling strongly tied to their brand. And then I think the other thing is just like kind of getting like a microscopic level of like what's going on, right? Like I'm always looking at the high level numbers for Rosen even today, but then it's like I send out an email and like, 100 people respond and it's like, oh shit, these are all individual people who really care about what you're doing and like continue to support you. And it's like, even if it's like 5 or 10 or 30, it's like that's a lot of customers, you know what I mean? And that's a lot of individuals. And so I feel like that has helped me throughout the time too, like feeling connected to what my purpose is and how I actually impact people's lives.
Absolutely. One thing I want to talk about you, like to you for sure, is the fact that I think, especially right now on social media, entrepreneurship is so like glorified and the highs are always posted. And it's like, you know, become your own boss and start a business and you'll become rich and everything will be great. And that, you know, like that's literally like the mindset I think a lot of people have towards entrepreneurship until they kind of try it out themselves. So I think you do a really good job at like being transparent about the highs and the lows and just showing the whole experience in one. So what are your kind of thoughts about that and kind of what is perceived on social media right now?
Yeah, I think winning creates good engagement, honestly. And so it's like if I sometimes there's certain things that I post that, top mistakes I make, those will do great. But also like me walking into Ulta, like that's gonna do really good. Like people like to see other people win. And that creates this feedback loop of like everybody's always winning on social because that's what's gonna do better on engagement. And the more engagement you get, the more sales you get. And so it's just like this feedback loop that I think like people have to pull themselves out and realize a little bit that like not everybody's winning all the time. I mean, I think when it comes to entrepreneurship, I think the best way to frame it, like when I've talked to like family members or friends, is like every single day I have to figure out how I'm gonna pay myself, and every single day I have to figure out how I'm gonna pay my team or how I'm gonna make money. So if I look at you today and say, go make $1,000, go make $5,000, and you have to figure that out today, tomorrow, within the next 5 days, like that's incredibly stressful. And
Definitely.
that's what entrepreneurship is. I think early on it can be a little bit more flexible because maybe it's like it's your side gig and your bills are paid or whatever, but it's like when you get to this level, it's like, okay, Jamaica, figure out how you're gonna make X, Y, and Z, you know, five figures, six figures amount of dollars this week or this month so that you can pay for all these things you need. And if you don't make this money, like everything you have is gone. You know what
Definitely.
I mean? And that helps frame, like put a frame of reference for what entrepreneurship is, especially once you get to scale. And I think, especially even now, I love where we are and I love where I built Rosie, but sometimes I think about future stuff where like, maybe it's just me and maybe it's me and like another part-time person and I don't have to worry about like holding everything up, you know? And so I would say that's a realistic look at like what entrepreneurship feels like and why entrepreneurs like, this is so stressful. I wake up anxious. I wake up thinking yep. about margins. I can't go to sleep. And it's because you're responsible for like all of these things. And sometimes you're responsible for like your team's livelihood and making sure they get paid and they can eat. And it's just like, it's a lot to run. And mm-hmm. so I think that's the more realistic version of entrepreneurship that like why entrepreneurs are always like, no, like this is really stressful, you know?
Definitely. No, and thank you for, you know, being so transparent about that. So just in terms of like Rosen's timeline, how long were you like on your own doing this? And then when did you decide to like bring someone on your team?
Yeah. So basically I was running Rosen for about a year by myself before I got paid. So I was just like babysitting and doing stuff like that just to like pay my bills, but Rosen wasn't paying me. About a year in, Rosen paid me like just enough to like pay rent. I think I was paying myself like maybe $700 or $800 a month. And I think I was like, my rent was $600. Like I was barely getting by, but I didn't have to do anything else. I could only do Rosen. Later that year, so this would have been about a year and a half in, I brought in somebody to like help pack orders, customer service. She would probably work like a few hours a week. And then honestly, from there till like 2020, she eventually went full time. I think I brought on like one or two other people part time. I always started people like, hey, I can only afford to have you 2 hours a week. When I have more work for you, I'll bring you up. And so that's kind of what it looked like. Like maybe somebody was on social for like 4 hours a week. I had somebody packing orders for like 2 hours a day, you know, so I would just kind of keep it super lean. And then 2020 was the biggest my team was because we still did everything in-house. So I probably had 15 to 18 people on the team between my warehouse, like contractors helping with social, email, things like that. And then right now we have a 3PL, so we've outsourced a lot of stuff. And so my team is pretty lean right now. There's about like three or four of us. Between like social, supply chain, things like that.
Super cool. No, it's super cool to hear the journey. And yeah, I think sometimes like with brands, you don't hear all of this stuff in terms of like how they're actually operating on the back end. Because I think from a viewer's perspective, sometimes there's that perception of like, oh, it's a brand. They have like all these people and it's just like all this cash flowing in and out. And it's like, that's not always the reality. Like a lot of the brands out there are, you know, smaller businesses that are literally just a few individuals doing everything that needs to be done. So really appreciate your transparency with that. So you mentioned 2020 was a big year for Rosen, which is incredible. And I'm so happy that the brand is, you know, thriving because there's so many products that I absolutely love from Rosen. So since 2020, how was that like, you know, with COVID ending, people going, not spending as much time online, as you mentioned, like with e-commerce, everything like that, how did that impact the business?
Yeah, so for us, 2020, 2021, pretty like solid. Obviously 2020 was like a good year for us. 2021 was solid. And I would say towards like mid 2022, 2023 is when it was like, okay, the same marketing tactics aren't working anymore. We are, you know, like whether it's like engagement or, you know, staying fresh in the market, like things have just shifted up. And also I think the excitement of like, obviously, like you said, D2C kind of like got different. A lot of brands I know went like, okay, omnichannel, retail, like what are we doing here? Also like transparently, I think there's like a huge buzz for supporting Black owned brands. And I think that kind of died off as well. So it got harder and it remains harder, I think, to figure out how to cut through the noise, how to build a brand that lasts and is exciting and is, you know, buzzy in the way that we had in 2020 and 2021. So it's been an interesting journey. I would say I think the biggest things for us, one, has been learning retail. So 2020 was the last year we were fully direct to consumer. The margins are different, how you ship product, like everything is just very different. And so learning retail was a whole new process of like, okay, I'm in. How do I drive business there? What is the expected velocities? How much, like, what does my P&L look like now? So that was a big learning curve. And then I think now still, we're still doing work to like, okay, Facebook ads are in a different place, but maybe it's TikTok ads. And, you know, obviously photos kind of out now and it's video. And so like all these different ways that I work with influencers, make content and kind of just like continue to have a strong digital footprint have been things that we continue to kind of like learn and I think adapt to in these new years. Because I do think content and social and even building a new brand, on one hand it's easier and on one hand it's harder. I think of like the tactics that I used when I built Rosen on social. I think if I did those same things today, I don't think it would work. I don't think it would have built in the way that it built back then. But at the same time, there's people starting brands and going viral and you know, whatever content. That stuff. And so it's hard to say, but I definitely think since 2020, it's a very different space. And there's just been like a lot of learnings for us.
And coming off, like, I think for a lot of people naturally too, like you see those highs in your business or whatever work you're doing, and you kind of might have that expectancy that, like, okay, this is how it's gonna be now. So how did you kind of learn to manage expectations when, let's say, things weren't as high the year following?
Yeah, no, it was hard to like try harder and see slower growth. I think that was like it was very hard, especially because it was like we were growing like year over year very consistently. So it was like 2017, 18, 19, 20. Like it wasn't like we were kind of hovering here and then 2020 shot us off. Like it was in line with the growth rates we were already having. And so up until that point, it was kind of like, okay, bet. Like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. And like, not that this was easy, but like, I feel very confident that I can keep pushing. So it's like at this point, I'm like, the world is our oyster. Like, I can do whatever I want here. And so to then kind of come into the following years, like, oh shit, like this is really hard to keep going and keep it exciting because we're not new anymore, right? Like, we're not. And so how do we get people excited about us? I would say it definitely was like there was definitely an ego check there, like an ego blow of like, not that I definitely question like, am I equipped to do this? Can I take Rosen to the next level? Maybe I was just really good at getting us to this point, and I don't know how to take us further. And so there was like a piece of that. There's a piece of feeling like I could articulate what we needed to do, but every time we did those things, it didn't land. And then it was also, I think, honestly, having conversations with our investors. I would say conversations with investors and other founders helped me the most, where it's like, oh, like we're kind of all in the same boat right now. And of course, there's like rock star brands that are still like shooting off and doing crazy well. But like I talked to the majority of the founders that are in my cohort that are around the same size as me, they're like, no, I'm having the exact same struggles. And my investors are like, this is like a really tough market. And like, if you make it through this market, feel really good because I ran through like recessions like this, right? And so those conversations, I think, helped me realize like, okay, I'm not incompetent. I'm just in a tough market and I need to figure it out and figure out like, how does Rosen look in this new wave, you know?
Absolutely. And I think too, like, it's hard to kind of know, like, you can't like predict, you know, all of these things, especially in the world and, you know, with the pandemic. And it's kind of like you mentioned, like, certain social media tactics and marketing tactics that you use might not work today. And I think a lot of it does go into like time and place. And even for myself, I can relate with that. Just being on social media and being a content creator, I've been doing this for now 10 years. And, you know, there was times where I'm like, I'm putting in so much work and I'm not seeing the results. And then I would do like a silly little trend, and then that would like go crazy just because like that was the time and place. And yes, I did learn like tips and tricks that like, yes, do help my performance, but sometimes it is just like that one video or that one post that just kind of goes crazy, and you can't like always predict that. But I think, like you mentioned too, just like keeping your head high and just like allowing that kind of adaptability to take place, because as you mentioned as well, like being in that role and being like, okay, this is working what I'm doing. And then when you keep doing that and then you're not seeing the same results, it's like, okay, now what do I do? And it kind of does throw you for a loop because it feels like, okay, if this isn't working anymore, like I don't know. And you forget, like, I think for myself, I've always noticed too, like you kind of forget that you did it once and like you might just have to like pivot and try something else, because once you're in that role, you're like, okay, I'm stuck. Like I can't go down this path anymore. But you just have to remember that, like, you know, you did it once and you can probably do it again. With how many brands are, like, I think there's so many brands in the beauty space and new ones coming up every single day. How have you made sure that Rosen still stands out and has that unique factor to it, it when it's such a saturated industry right now?
Yeah, no, there's definitely been, I think, some like minor iterations of Rosen, particularly like how we talk about ourselves. So I think like the vision and the goal that I have for the brand and the category remains the same. But when I started Rosen, like I said, it was legacy acne. So it was like the orange face wash, the benzoyl peroxide face wash, like drugstore acne kind of just looked like that. And that's when I was like, yo, like, why isn't new stuff happening here? Of course, that's not what drugstore acne looks like right now. We have Surface, we have Hero Cosmetics, you know, and there's other brands in there, and there's brands that are, you know, continue to come up in that space. I remember this is probably 2020, 2021, where like Target buyers were like, acne is like one of our hottest categories right now. Everyone's trying to get into acne. And so that changed the game, where it was like, okay, I'm not just innovating the drugstore acne aisle because there's other new brands here, and frankly, other new brands who have more capital and more access than I do. And so I can't just like beat them at their own game because they're going to outshine me. And so that caused us to pivot a little bit more of a focus. Like I said, obviously, you know, I'm a Black woman, hyperpigmentation and dark spots, and like skincare that catered towards that, as well as my acne journey, has always been core to what I do and core to the reason why Rosen started and like the representation that we hope to see in the aisle. And so I would say that as of late has been a lot more of our focus when we think of like a Shea Moisture or a lip bar or like a honey pot, where it's like these brands can really be used by anybody, right? Like obviously my products can be used by, you know, non-people of color or non-Black people, non-people of color. But when it comes to like who we're talking to and like who our core customer is, how are we really drawing affinity with those women? And that's been a big focus for us. And I think fortunately, my investors, their portfolio is a lot of brands who really pioneered that space, whether it's in curly hair care or in color cosmetics or feminine care. It's like, okay, we know how to kind of cut this noise and really connect with this customer demographic and build an affinity there. And so that's been our biggest kind of like focus as of late when we think about drugstore acne and we think about this like newer wave of like acne and treatment care. How can we really connect with that customer, really draw affinity with them at like an accessible price point?
Absolutely. No, and I think that's some great piece of advice there of just like looking towards, as you mentioned, like the investors and other brands that are in that space that are, you know, reaching that same target audience. And you mentioned like Rosen kind of went through like some stages of iterations in terms of like the messaging behind the brand. Do you feel like that's, although maybe the how the you structured the message changed, do you think the intention and kind of your vision behind the brand kind of has stayed consistent throughout?
Yes, and that's like the biggest thing. And whenever I like work with brands on like some of their brand work or things like that, we'll go over, you know, the mission, the vision, the values, your brand statement, all of these things. But ultimately, I mean, you can obviously do a complete overhaul, but usually, at least in my experience, why you started the brand is very core to like what your vision is for the company. And that generally stays the same. I think the times, and for us, it has stayed the same. For us, like that core belief of what we're trying to do in the acne aisle has remained the same. It's just a matter of like how we message it or how we, you know, kind of like position ourselves. I think the times where you can do a complete overhaul is like, okay, people aren't resonating. Like this idea isn't resonating anymore with like the market and the industry, right? And so then it's like, okay, maybe we're not doing X, maybe we're doing Y now, and we're redoing everything. But for us, it's really been core of like the goal we're trying to serve has remained the same. It's just kind of like tweaking how we present it to customers.
And what would you say is that like breaking point of like knowing when to persevere with an idea that maybe is not hitting the market the way you thought and versus pivoting like completely?
I would say, no, that's a good question. I think for us, you know, I mean, timelines are hard, but I do love to give things at least like 3 to 6 months. And sometimes that's hard since I've only like 6 months, you know, and it doesn't work. Then you're kind of like, shit, But I think, early on, maybe a little bit shorter, but I think if you continue to see a lack of response, if you, kind of have new launches and you have collaborations and you have maybe a visual kind of refresh or things like that, and it's still kind of like, okay, like cool, like people like it, but they're kind of like not sticking to it. I think that's when it's like, okay, what do we do here? Because this isn't working. And I would say we definitely, not from like a core brand perspective, but from like how we're creating content, how we talk about the brand, packaging, like some of these things where it's like who we're working with and how we present ourselves. There was definitely, I think, like after that big buzz for us, like we got into 2022, 2023, and it's like we keep presenting the brand in this way, and people are just kind of like, yeah, no, like I love what you do, and I think what you're doing is great, but there's not like this, like, I need to know what Rosen is doing. It's kind of like you guys are just there, right? And so that for me at the top of this year was like something has to change, and like who we work with, how we talk about the brand. All this has to change. And that's what we're doing this year. And if there's still like a lack of stickiness there, then I'll probably go into like the end of this year or next year, like, okay, something about this entire concept has to change because people aren't resonating. And I think it's like you can ditch it and be like, I'm over it. I don't want to do it anymore. Or you can try to, figure it out and see if you want to like try to find your path in this space. But there's a little bit of gut instinct there because I think I felt it a few times and I've gone past it. And then I'm like, yeah, no, this isn't resonating. And I know it's not because I know what it feels like to have it resonate,
Absolutely. And as a founder, how do you kind of maybe detach like the emotional connection to like some of the products or even the concepts or the brand as a whole when deciding to maybe pivot or leave it behind?
Yeah, it's very difficult. I remember like getting emotional, so we like didn't like a mask. I'd be like, I tried so hard for this one. And so like now obviously I'm a little bit more detached, but it's very hard because we built so much of our identity around this. I think the thing that I found solace in a few ways is accepting the most extreme version of I've done if I shut Rose down like today, like which is like the most extreme version of like what could ever happen. I've done enough and I've really accomplished enough to be happy with where I've been at. And even though I didn't accomplish what I wanted to, I've accomplished enough. And I think the other thing that helps me, just like personally, aside from like me as the founder of Rosen, is like really valuing all of your concepts and all of your ideas. And so knowing that whatever iteration you have of the next version of what you're building, or if it's something totally new that you're building, like they're all really cool concepts. And just because one came first doesn't mean it has to be the most important one or the one that you stick all of your identity to, right? Like you can have the second iteration just because it didn't come first, but it's like new, it's just as valid, and you can put just as much time and energy into it, And so I think that has helped me as well be a little bit more like nimble in like the entrepreneurial space.
And of course, like with any brand, I remember when I first launched my brand, I got this, and it's kind of interesting that this is the comment that stuck with me, but I reference it a lot because I do think it really highlights maybe outsiders' perspective on small businesses and all of that. But when I did launch, and obviously this was kind of like a silent hater of mine or something, they did comment saying, oh, well, it's obvious you're just starting this brand to make money. And I found that really like an ironic comment because at the end of the day, like brands do need to make money to keep going. Like you can't just work on something forever if it's not bringing any sort of, especially if you're trying to like move on so that the brand is your full-time job. Like, you can't be running, the money will run out one day is what I'm trying to say. So I did find that really interesting, but I think behind any brand, there's passion behind it that obviously you're looking for it to drive some sort of sale. But the reason I'm bringing that up is you mentioned earlier there's that everyday stress of like, I need to pay myself, I need to pay my workers, and that's a lot of the pressure of making sure the brand keeps going. And as you mentioned, that worst case scenario is let's say, like, if Rosen shuts down, does that fear go further than just the pay for you, where it's like, okay, if that happens, then what's next for me as like a career altogether and like part of an identity? Because I think, like, I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I would say Rosen is a part of your identity as like a founder and all of that. So would that kind of question, like, make you question your worth, or do you have any words of how you would maybe trying to overcome that hypothetically, if anything were to
Yeah.
happen like that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've thought about life. I mean, I think I've thought about life after Rosen for a while because the goal for Rosen for me, I mean, similar in the vein of like making money. Obviously, yes, I have this goal and this passion and this idea for what I want the acne space to look like, but
Yeah.
also I don't want to run this forever and I do want to sell my company one day, you know, and
Okay,
I
yep.
it's a for-profit business and I want to make money off of it. And so I've always thought about like what life would look like after Rosen. Obviously, life after Rosen, if you have a big exit, is a lot like funner because you kind of like check that box versus like, you know, the alternative of something like horrible happening. But yes, it's very scary for me. The thought of life after Rosen in any circumstance is very scary for me. I've never had a corporate job. I went from undergrad straight to this, so this is kind of like all I know. It's a lot of my achievements, a lot of how people view me, a lot of how people respect me is tied to this role, you know? And there is a big fear of like failure tied into that because it's like, oh my God, like you guys all look at me so highly because I've done X, Y, and Z. And if I can't keep doing this, what is everyone's view of me? And that's something you want to get over, but it's like, of course, it still exists. I think for me, thinking about allowing myself to explore things outside of Rosen, which has been a big thing for me this year, exploring like creative pursuits or ideas, or even just like the coaching and stuff that I do outside of Rosen has taken some of that anxiety away from me, and where it's like I'm not relying on these as like income streams, but it allows me to feel safe and like my identity outside of just running Rosen. And so that's been a big thing for me, and feeling more secure in that because it's like running Rosen and being the founder of Rosen has really led me to everything pretty much I have professionally, whether it's like obviously the money I make from running Rosen, like my salary, or it's like this, like interviews, or when I speak on panels, or when I do this, it's like it's because I'm the founder of Rosen. And so the thought of that going away is like, does everything go away? And it's scary. And I think allowing myself to connect to career pursuits outside of Rosen has helped me feel less anxious in that and more solid in, whatever my kind of like future looks like. Obviously I hope the plan is to continue going with Rosen, but it even allows me, I think, more flexibility in when I'm able to kind of step away from Rosen and still be involved, but maybe not fully involved. There's also less of an identity pull there, which is like, okay, cool. Like I can, be creative director and I can still lead like product development and you guys run the company. And it's not like my baby that I have to do everything for, all this stuff. Like I'm trying to set myself up for that day as well. And I think doing this has been helpful.
So in the case that, like, let's say you would sell the company, you'd still want to be like involved with it. You wouldn't just like step away from it completely.
Yes, exactly. And so it's like if I do kind of get somebody to come in and like acquire a piece of it or whatever that looks like, and they kind of build out a team, but it's like I can still be involved, but it's not like my living, breathing everything. And that sounds great, but it's not an easy step. And so I think like trying to figure out how I like disconnect a little bit, making that step easier so it's not this like huge drop happens,
Just even having this conversation, like I'm trying to put myself in that situation of like, okay, how would I feel in that position? I think for me the biggest thing is like kind of giving up control, especially like I know with my brand, like and you can probably relate to this, like formulating everything and making all the decisions around like even just every single post that goes up. Like, I don't know. I think I would have a very difficult time giving up that control and like having someone take over what I've created thus far. And I'm sure you kind of feel similar to that as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's certain things I would say in that time, that like 2021 to like last year time, that time was very helpful for me from a business perspective to be like, okay, this is what I know the brand, I know the formula, I know who Rosen is and what we do and who we're for, but supply chain or like finances or conversations with buyers, like when it's like a promo strategy, there's people out there who are way better at that than I am. And I think that journey helped me a lot to like, cool, like you guys can run it and I know how to, build the brand. But then it's like, yeah, the thought of somebody like running lead on a campaign or like concepts on new products, like that's something I've never even like allowed other people to touch. And so that would be very difficult for me.
Absolutely. I do love how you touched on the fact that obviously, yourself and probably most people who start a business or even have a dream in life is this dream to like blow up the company and really, really scale it up. And I loved how you mentioned, even if that doesn't happen, you are aware of what you've done thus far and you're happy with all the progress that the brand and yourself have made thus far. And I love that you touched on that because I think so many of us, I talk a lot about goals on this podcast and setting goals because I think a lot of us have these goals in which once we reach that, we're already moving that goalpost so quickly before we even reach the goal that it's like we're never fully appreciative of the work we've done thus far because it's like I can always do more and more and more, right? Like with a brand, you make your first 100 sales and you're like, that would be crazy. But then once you get there, you're like, oh, this number could be 1,000 and so on and so forth. So I think you talking about that is so important to highlight. And even as you said, like whether you never know what happens in the future, whether you sell or whether the brand does blow up even more or that worst case scenario situation as well, it's so important to recognize. And as you did, like what you've done thus far. And although you talk about, okay, who would I be outside of Rosen? You still created it. And there's so many people out there who do have that dream, but don't take that leap of faith to literally sit down in their kitchen and formulate the products and go through all that work. So I think, yeah, no, it's super cool that not only you've done all this and but also the way you talk about it, I think is you talk about it in such like a healthy way, which I think needs to be shown more on social media. So that's super cool. So what's next for Rosen in the next coming years? You did mention that after last year, it was like, okay, we need to change some things up. So what are some of those things, if you don't mind sharing, that you guys have in plan?
Well, first of all, thank you. Thank you for, all the kind words. I appreciate that. Yeah, what's next for Rosen? A few things I think we've shifted this year. One is newness. So I think realistically in the beauty space, and I've kind of talked about this on my social, I was always really in love with like a very simple, minimal kind of like brand that I think Legacy Acne does a great job of. However, I think it's very difficult unless you are Legacy Acne to like not have newness in the beauty space because your brand gets kind of stale quick, and that's big for us. So we have a new launch, which by this time just came out. So we are launching kind of like a honey line, really
Ooh.
focusing on kind of like honey, kojic acid, and turmeric, and how those ingredients can work for acne-prone skin, fighting acne-causing bacteria, and of course preventing dark spots, which is a big thing for our core customer base. One thing I'm really excited about this launch and some other launches that we're going to have this year is a very different look for our launches. So anybody who's familiar with Rosen knows that like our packaging is pretty much all the same across the board, just different information on it. Same labels, same bottles, and it have like a lot of uniformity with our brand. But I really want to bring more excitement and more like freshness and newer identities to the brand this year. And so the look for this launch is very different. And it's going to feel like almost like another brand. And kind of to your point earlier around like, when to pivot, when to switch, it's like, where are these little moments you can like rebrand or like tweak and like put it out without like doing this whole overhaul? And so a lot of our new product launches this year are going to look like that, and they are going to have a very different visual identity, and very different, ingredient stories that we haven't touched on before. And then, of course, building our community. I think that's a very big focus for us this year. I think we've had a really tight community in previous years, and we still have like our Rosen reps who are super active, but we're thinking about like what platforms can we get on, what ways can we reward them that feels like fun and gamey and just really engaging. And so I would say those are like definitely our biggest focus this year, and hopefully some brand partnerships as well. Maybe it's a limited edition like launch with somebody. Maybe it's kind of like a little bundle or kit. I think just like leaning on other people in their community is something I'm really thinking about. So there's a lot of shifts for us this year. We'll see. But I'm excited.
Super cool. No, that line sounds amazing. I cannot wait to see it and like see the new packaging and everything. That's so cool. So as you mentioned, like by this time this episode's out, it should be out. So I'll have the website for Rose and everything in the description of this episode that you guys can check out, which is super cool. I do have a quick question about I know we kind of touched on adaptability earlier, but in terms of, just these past years, like marketing and especially the social media space and influencers and creators, that's changed so much. So did you have like when starting the brand, did you have a lot of like social media experience like before diving into the brand, or did you kind of have to learn all of that with the brand itself?
Yeah, I learned it all. I think when I started the brand, I think I had like 900 followers like on my Instagram, and then Rosen had like none. So I learned it all. Like I would say a lot of it I learned through, granted, it was like Instagram, so it's a lot easier. It's just kind of pictures. But I learned through other brands what they were doing, what influencers were doing, and like I trying to keep it as people focused as possible was very big for us early on. And then of course, yeah, trying to continue to learn the trends and the ways people edit, and even I had a good conversation with one of my mentors the other day, who was just talking about like even like organic content is very hard to rely on. You know, it's very sometimes you can like create really good content, and sometimes it works, like you said, and sometimes it doesn't. And so it's like even I mean this is just like a pain that so many things are behind a paywall, but it's like, hey, don't stop your content flywheel after posting. Like, can you chop it up and repost it? Can you chop it up and put a budget behind it? And like all of these things. And so that's something that is new compared to when I started, but part of that kind of like, I guess, adaptability to what's on how these platforms are working.
I see. And I guess this is a question, like, as a personal, like, new small business owner, when you're starting off and you're when you're bootstrapping, what would you say, like, you should be putting, let's say, more money or most of your resources towards? Would that be like paid advertising, like you mentioned, or would that be new products, or would that be like local community engagement? What would you recommend, like, is like the top thing that you should be really prioritizing before the next?
So I think most of our budget probably should go to making products. I think that's the biggest thing I focused on early on. So I could either like have stuff to send out to influencers, have stuff to send out samples, and obviously have product to sell. I would say today, because I think when I started spending money is different than how I would spend money today. For beauty, I honestly really like, we just started kind of like really taking it serious. TikTok shop with some ads pointing to TikTok shop. And then if you do like affiliates, like how you can do the influencers on like connected to your TikTok shop, that's honestly where I would focus on most of your budget, honestly. I think that that's going to be the most scalable. I think you can do like in real life stuff like pop-ups or markets or things like that to make money. I think those are great ways to like start making money. In real life experiences, I don't think those need to be spent on super heavy early on. It's they just don't have a strong return, and they're kind of like a little bit more of a brand awareness play. And I think at this stage, I assume you're like kind of, you know, just trying to like how we build sales. And so I think the most direct return you're gonna have is like creating like a UGC compilation video, putting it on TikTok ads, pointing it to your TikTok shop. I think that's gonna be the most return. And then can you bring in affiliates to again, drive to TikTok shop. I think that's like the strategy I'm talking with a lot of brands about right now. And I just started kind of looking into like athleisure kind of like clothes and stuff that I'm interested in, which is, you know, kind of a completely side thing. And that's probably the strategy that I'm planning to take there.
I see. Interesting. Yeah, like here, because I live in Canada, so we don't have the TikTok shop here. We do on Instagram, but not on
Okay.
TikTok. Yeah.
Yeah, so I would say, I don't know, I can't speak to the Insta, I don't think Instagram shop is doing the same things that TikTok
I
shop is.
agree.
So I wouldn't do that. I would you can play, I can't speak to the difference on TikTok ads versus Facebook ads driving to your site, because right now we have just a TikTok shop because it's just a lower barrier to entry. I can't speak to like what's more effective there. I just think that right now, and you might be able to, I mean, I think you have a lot of perspective from your side just as an influencer. Beauty with influencers is tricky, especially skincare, because it's just like you have to use it consistently. They have to see these like stunning results, and it's hard. And not to
The
say like you
before and
need.
afters, yeah.
Yeah, and you need UGC. You need people to say like, "I love this product." Like that's definitely very big, but it's kind of that thing similar to what I was saying with my mentor was talking about, where she's like, "Yeah, we'll have people post or we'll get UGC, but like we aren't relying on their posts to drive sales because things you posting like organic is just so up and down, right? It's like you don't really know, and so it's like if you get that, put a budget behind it, and then maybe drive to your site." We're testing that out with like driving to Ulta.com. We have like inconclusive results there. So that's why I'd say it's hard to know, but that is something you could look at. Steepers is like the, I don't know if it's in Canada, but it's like this, I'll put it in the chat. It's like this, you can just get a bunch of UGC. And you again, you might actually already know because obviously you're a content creator too, but you can get a bunch of UGC on there and use that to create ads. I would say if you can't do TikTok Shop, that might make sense for you guys right now.
Well, that, yeah, no, some great tips there. And I'm like, let me ask, because it's like you can only learn from people who have already gone through the experience. One thing I do want to talk about before we end this episode off is the whole comparison game, and especially with social media, and then also obviously like you see all these other brands on social media or in your circle or who you meet in real life. So how do you kind of make sure that, you know, your focus stays on what you're doing with Rosen and you're not kind of shifting that energy into comparing yourself to bigger brands or brands who maybe launch later and are seeing more numbers? Like how do you kind of maintain a positive attitude in that? Because I think it's so easy for anyone to start comparing themselves in any situation, but especially in an entrepreneurship situation.
Yeah, no, I think it's difficult, right? Because there's pieces you want to see what's working. What are people doing and what's kind of working on? Maybe social, maybe how well they're doing, maybe, you know, whatever that is. So there's a level of like kind of you have to kind of see what's going on in the space. But at the same time, it's very anxiety inducing looking at what everybody else is doing and getting the noise about what everybody else is doing. I think the biggest thing is understanding where you are and really like you're just fighting against yourself, right? And it's like, I'm not where they are. There's brands that aren't where I'm at, right? And so it's like, I can't try to replicate what they're doing because one, they're going to do it better. They already came up with what they want. They've already came up with their sauce. If you just try to replicate their sauce, you're not going to do what they do better than them. And so I think you have to understand that and know that you have to figure out what you're going to do in a way that's unique in the same way that they are. And then two, like the only progress you can measure against when you're talking to investors, when you're looking at your, you know, numbers and your financials is your own progress. You're not looking at how you did versus this other brand, right? It's, oh, like we grew more than this brand, you know, last quarter. It's like, okay, but how much did you grow? You know? It's like you have to, I think, realize that too, where it's like all you're doing is competing against yourself. You have to get better than where you're at currently. Take inspiration, you know, take feedback and understand what the market looks like and how folks are playing. But know that like you're never going to do what they do better than them, and you have to measure your own progress to kind of keep pushing and being, I think, again, you know, kind of that conversation of just like being satisfied with where you are and what you have achieved, being happy and satisfied with the progress that you have made and where you are at, you know, and using that as your benchmark versus like where everybody else is, I think is very important.
Absolutely. I love that. I absolutely love that. I think that's so important to remember. So before we end this off, I do have to ask you a common question I like to ask most guests is, what's something that you love about your skin?
Oh yes, I think I love my melanin. You know, I think I love the color of my skin. I like how easily I can tan. So yeah, I would say that for sure.
That's awesome. And do you have anything that you want to mention before we end this episode off?
I mean, I guess the only thing is our new launch. I mean, I'm so excited about this launch. Like I said, it's a very different look and feel for us. Very much focused on kind of like brightening, glowy, and of course the acne prone guest is always at the core of like all of our formulas. So there's some acne fighting, scar fighting ingredients in there. So that's very exciting. Just launched. It's only on our website, so it's not gonna be on any retailers. It's just at Rosen Skincare. So yeah, I would say that's the biggest thing.
That's super exciting. No, the line sounds amazing. Cannot wait to see it. And as I mentioned, I'll have everything Rosen related down below in the description if you're watching on YouTube. Well, Jamika, thank you so much for joining me in this episode of Loud Talk. I love getting to know you and just hearing more about Rosen and the story and hearing some of your insights as well. To anyone listening in, if you are listening on Apple or Spotify, make sure to follow this podcast and give it a 5-star rating. And if you're watching on YouTube, thank you so much for joining. Comment down below what you thought of this episode. Make sure to give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the Loud Talk channel. We post every single Sunday at 7 a.m. MST. All right. Thank you so much.